BYUFan.com, Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 415. Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, we got a packed show tonight. Packed.
It's chock full. Chock full it is.
Chock full?
Yeah, chock full. That's an expression.
Yeah, it's a dumb expression.
You've never heard that
expression. I've heard it. I just like making fun of you. It's my thing. Come on. All right, so we're going to open... We're going to open with a question, okay? We've got an opening from a listener today.
All right.
It's from Wade Hillam. He did this on Facebook. You can join the conversation at facebook.com/riseandshout. He said, I've been asked many times who wins a fight between Batman and Superman or between Iron Man and Thor. Not fair fights. Rich humans versus otherworldly beings. The real question is who wins Thor versus Superman and Batman versus Iron Man. So, Matt, I would like to predict who you think is going to win each of those fights, and you can tell me if I did it right.
Excellent.
So you hold on to what who you think is
going to win. All right, go ahead.
Are you ready?
All right, I have reached conclusions on both of these.
Okay, all right. I just want to be ready. And I am ready to give the answer to this question for you.
And we're just taking my word that I'm not going to change my opinion. Just like I have something in my mind, and if you guess correctly, I'll say the other one just so I can say you weren't right.
Yes, all those things. All those things. Jason Bourne.
That is correct.
All right. All right. There we go. We had it. Yeah. Because you always pick Bourne in these things, even when he's not in these things. All right. But seriously, who would you pick?
Yes, it's a trained assassin.
Who would you pick, Thor or Superman?
Who do you think I would pick?
I think you'd pick Superman.
Wow, you were incorrect.
Oh, you'd pick Thor.
I would pick Thor. Yeah, I'd go with Thor there.
Go with the God of Thunder. I would also...
God of Thunder.
I'd go with Superman. I'm going to go with Superman. That'd be a fun one. What about Batman versus Iron Man?
That'd be a fun one. Batman versus Iron Man. So what's your prediction on what you think I would pick?
Iron Man.
I would pick Iron Man, even though I like Batman more. Like, I like the story, I like the movies, but Iron Man's got, like, the weapons are ridiculous.
Yeah, all the tech. And he wears a suit of, like, really hard armor to crack. Now, if you take him out of the suits, I'm taking Batman, right? I mean,
yeah.
Especially.
Yeah, this is just, like, a street fight?
Yeah. And the Superman Thor's got to be a street fight too. No weapons, no magic hammers.
No hammer.
Because if you get the hammer, you're probably right with Thor. But wouldn't Superman be able to pick up the hammer? He's worthy.
I don't know. I'd have to think about that. But without the hammer,
Thor is bound to the ground. Yeah. Yeah, I think.
Just disadvantage.
Yeah, that is a disadvantage. That is a disadvantage. All right. Well, interesting. Jason Bourne's the winner.
You got to let Thor have the hammer. But in either of these cases, Jason Bourne wins.
Yeah, he wins. They don't even see him coming. All right. So let's hop into the tweet bag, Matt.
Tweet bag.
So, of course, the most important topic we have to talk about is hot dogs.
You keep saying done with this conversation. But we just keep coming back to it.
The listeners keep coming back to it. I don't keep coming back to it. Do you want me to ignore our listeners? We've got like 10 of them left.
You're essentially the producer of the show. You can choose.
I understand whether that.
We cover this hot dog issue or not.
But we're in the middle of a global pandemic, and I'm not ashamed to say that our listenership is not as high as it used to be. Right? Like, people are focused on other things, and if the listeners want us to talk about hot dogs, you know what I'm going to talk about? Hot dogs.
Apparently hot dogs.
All right, so Gary Payne.
Yep.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, give the people what they want. Let's talk about hot dogs.
Yeah, give the people what they want. So, Gary Payne on Twitter, that's at FastBreakGP, and of course, you can tweet at us at BYU_RedShot. He says, hot dog sandwich, boom, we did it, it's done. And it's a picture of a hot dog cut into slices, put on two pieces of bread.
Delicious.
And
we've all done it.
I agree with him, That is a hot dog sandwich.
And we've all done it.
I've never done it. I don't
Why
think.
have you never done that?
Because just put it in a freaking hot dog bun.
Listen, did you go to college?
Yes,
You
and
went
I
to
would
college.
wrap. If I didn't have a hot dog bun, I would just take the hot dog and wrap it in one piece of bread, like a
Done
bun.
that. Done that a lot. I never actually, I never bought hamburger or hot dog buns in college because I couldn't afford to have that many different types of bread. So I ate hamburgers on white bread, and I did hot dogs where I rolled it up like you just where like you just described.
Nice
voice but I also
crack, by
did
the way.
Whatever. I also did the cut up laid flat across the multiple hot dogs laid flat across the sandwich. It's a great option.
Anyway, so Gary
I think
shared
I've
that
done
with
that.
us.
I don't know when the last time I did it, but it's a great option. Way to go, Gary.
Way to go, Gary. So, Sweeney
Sweeney.
Had some back and forth on this. And then another Twitter guy, Nathan Phillips, I had never heard of this. He went back and said, the cube rule of food identification, a definitive answer to your question in this episode, are hot dog sandwiches. So Justin responds to that and says, so a corn dog is a calzone and a hot dog is now a taco? I'm not sure this helps. And then Nathan replies, and spaghetti and steak are salads, and soup is a wet salad. It's all very clear now.
Yeah, I actually really liked the cube rule, except for the fact that it called a hot dog a taco.
Well, I mean, yeah, I don't know. First we asked, are hot dog sandwiches? You know? And New York said that they are. The state of New York, right? If you go to cuberule.com, right?
That's right.
But then the wars began. It's actually a pretty funny website. And then they have the chart, right? And it's the sandwich alignment chart is pretty funny, right? Like ice cream between waffles is a sandwich. Right.
Yeah, the ingredient purist, neutral, and rebel up against the structure purist, neutral, and rebel. Yeah, very interesting graph.
Radical sandwich anarchy is a Pop-Tart. It's a sandwich. Which, by the way, I went to a local place here in Wichita called Homegrown, and they do homemade Pop-Tarts. I don't know if I can ever eat the regular kind again. So good.
Yeah, there was a place in D.C. that does those. Oh, they're delicious.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So anyway, we'll finish with this on the food part that's both BYU sports related and food related. And this is an email from our friend Simon. And you can email the show at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com like Simon does. He says, Dear Rise and Shout Podcast, which BYU sports team is most likely to win a national championship next year? Which team is most likely to lose every team to every team they play? Also, a hot dog is not a sandwich, Simon says. Every sandwich definition I see online says meat between two slices of bread, not one. A hot dog is in a class of its own. Simon, you are correct, as usual.
Oh, my gosh.
Are you dissing Simon?
I'm dissing Simon's opinion.
Yeah, I don't think
Not
you should do that.
Simon, because I actually really like Simon's first question. But yeah, this thing about, listen, I will say this. Injecting into the conversation, a hot dog is in a class of its own. I appreciate what he's trying to do to help the two of us find some middle ground before there is a rift between our families forever. But we've had the conversation around the definition of meat between two slices of bread. So if I walk into Subway, and I have them take the bread that they use, throw some turkey, cheese, lettuce, tomato, whatever else I want in there, a little bit of mustard. Am I walking out of there with a sandwich or something else?
You're walking out with something else.
That's not a sandwich.
Correct, because it's not two pieces of bread.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm like those Supreme Court justices that, do the Constitution by strict interpretation.
So you are a structure purist.
I'm a structure purist, but an ingredient rebel.
So ice cream between two waffles is a sandwich.
Yeah, an ice cream sandwich, for example.
But turkey on a sub is not a sandwich.
Correct.
You're insane.
I'm not insane.
You're completely disconnected from reality.
That is not true. It's not true.
Ice cream between two waffles is a sandwich, but a sub is not a sandwich? You think that's a normal stance to take?
I'm just messing with you. It's the cube rule. I love the cube rule now. It's a sandwich if it has the two pieces of bread. It's a taco if it surrounds it. It's a calzone. I mean, if it's that three sides, if you will. It's a calzone if it's all of them. It's super salad with a bread pole if it's I love that. And it's sushi if you've got the cube open on one side or the other.
The problem we had is in the examples it's provided on the website.
That means like a taquito is sushi.
A taquito. No. A taquito, yeah, if it's open on both ends.
Yeah, it's open on both ends. Taquitos are sushi.
But see, they have a slice of pumpkin pie is toast.
Yes, it's toast. Correct. And your example of going to Subway.
An entire pumpkin pie is a salad.
Correct.
And an apple pie passed over the top is a calzone.
It's a calzone. But if I cut it. It is a calzone, though, right?
It's now a taco?
Yeah.
That's insane.
So pizza is toast.
I love it until I start eating pies because I don't know what to do at that point.
Lasagna is a sandwich. A hot dog is a taco.
That's a double-decker sandwich. That's right.
Yeah. Lasagna is a multi-deck sandwich. Right?
So is toast.
A quesadilla, if you don't fold it, is a sandwich. I don't know. Go to cubeworld.com. I'm sure a lot of you. And quiches, if it's just open on the top. So like a cherry pie where you don't have it on the top, that's a quiche.
If it's the whole
deep dish pizza they have as well. Key lime pie. Yeah, if it's the whole pie, not if it's a piece.
Yeah, but here's the example, right? So they have cheesecake with a graham cracker crust is a quiche, but if I cut it into slices, it's now toast.
Correct. I mean, it's insanity.
The pie is my struggle. I mean, a soup in a bread bowl is a quiche.
Correct. That's a quiche.
I don't understand.
I love the cube roll. It's fantastic.
Falafel pita. How is a falafel pita?
I don't know. It's going to be awesome. But I got to introduce this to the kids.
Oh, I see. Because you filled in the other sides.
Yeah,
because
you filled in the other side. Anyway, let's move on from this. We got lots of other things to talk about. Let's go to Simon's question. Pick a team, Matt, a BYU sports team that's most likely to win the national title. And by the way, thank you, Simon, for getting us on track because we're 13 minutes in and this is our first discussion of BYU sports. Shoot me. It's like a pandemic. There's a lot of news this week.
Yeah, there's a ton of news this week. So
lots going on.
Do you know who I want to put on that? Who I want to say that is?
Men's basketball?
Men's volleyball. No, men's volleyball.
Oh, yeah. Men's volleyball. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
They may have won a national championship this year.
I think other candidates would be some of the track teams that are always quite good, right? Cross country and track. I don't know if women's volleyball has the muscle to do that this year or not. I don't think so. But they're obviously a team that's consistently very good. Trying to think if there's any other. Women's soccer I don't think is good enough, though they've obviously have a really good program. I got to go with like one of the track teams or men's volleyball. I think those are your, if you were putting money down, that's who you'd put money on, right? One of those teams.
Yeah.
Cross country, women's, or track teams or something.
Before the volleyball season got canceled, right? I mean, they were 17-1. They're about to go down this stretch against you know, ranked Stanford team.
They beat Hawaii.
Yeah, like they were looking really good. I mean, they were really overpowering people. With the exception of that last match against Hawaii, right? But they were so dominant.
Yeah.
All year. I mean, they were barely losing at all. And so, you got to look at the roster and think about who's coming
everybody
back.
Everybody can come back, right? Because they made that exception.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, so
I haven't followed it.
The question for me is definitely men's volleyball.
And I haven't followed closely enough if they have decided they're coming back, right? Because they don't have to.
I don't know the answer to that.
Anyway, all right. Great question, Simon. Great question. And by the way, not football or men's basketball.
So, but who's most likely to lose every game they play?
Oh.
You're going to hate my answer to this question.
Don't say football.
I'm not saying I believe it's likely that they do that, but if I have to rank the teams in order of likelihood that that happens.
All right. Who, going to BYUCougars.com. There's got to be a team that's not good. Don't we have a single sports team that's not good?
That would lose all of their.
Men's baseball won't. Games? Basketball won't. Cross country won't. Football won't. These are men's sports. Golf, I don't know enough about, but they're usually pretty good. Swimming and diving, I know nothing about, so I have no idea. Maybe they're the most likely. Tennis is usually okay. Track and field, men's volleyball, we already talked about. Women's sports, basketball, they're not going to lose every game. Cross country, no. Golf, probably not. Gymnastics, I think they were pretty good last year, right?
I'm just pulling up their schedule from last year. You know, the first of two, second of four, second of three, first of two. Yeah, it's not going to be gymnastics.
Swimming and diving, probably not. Tennis, probably not. Track and field.
That's a much harder question. I have no idea,
to be honest, who's most likely. You're only saying football because you know this. You know who they're playing, right? Like, in reality, the team most likely to lose all of their matches or games or whatever is probably whoever plays the fewest. Right? Like, just mathematically, they have to be bad and not have many chances to win.
Well, and like golf is tough, right? Because you've got, like you can come in eighth or sixth. Is that a loss if there's, you know, eight teams out there? So that one's tough. Like, what is a loss for golf?
I don't know. That's a good question.
That becomes
tough
for
gymnastics. Track and field and gymnastics too.
If you got like four schools at a meet. You know, is that coming in last place? Because the likelihood of coming in last place at every one of those for either of those teams, I would say, is extremely low. You know, so maybe you're right. Maybe it's the team with the fewest matchups. And guess who that might
be? Might be football.
Football. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I believe it's likely. I'm not getting down on the football team at all. I'm just saying statistically. You know, looking at the record and the matchups.
You hate BYU.
I think
football.
That might be the answer. I think that might be the answer. That's all I'm saying. I don't think any of these teams are going to do that.
Yeah.
You know, like how often does that happen? It's so extremely rare.
Even the worst football teams of my lifetime won several games. Right.
Yeah. Even the worst basketball teams of our lifetime.
They won one.
They did win one.
They won one game. So, I mean, and that's once in school history. The worst possible scenario. So,
right. So I'm not saying that it is at all likely, but if I have to pick one of these sports.
You're going
to
pick football because you hate BYU football. That's okay.
Fewest number of games and a very tough schedule.
All right. So let's move on to basketball. We got some tweets because there's been some action going on.
Yeah, there has.
Sweeney's.
Are you going to say
question.
The name of that coach again? You're not going to say his name again tonight, are you?
I am not going to say his name again tonight. By the way, I looked it up. It was like episode 300 and something. I said his name as well.
It was less than 100 episodes ago? Jeez. How long have we been doing this?
A long time, man. 9 years. It's coming up on 10. We're hitting our 10th season insane. Here. Not too far. All right. Sweeney has this to say. Have you ever seen transfer influx like this? Ever. He used ever twice. In men's hoops or even football. Seems unprecedented. Pope is doing great things. Not going to tourney this year really was a shame. I think they do some damage and set up even a better 2020-2021. Hashtag tweet bag. I've never seen a transfer quite like this year. I mean,
I don't know that I'm aware of a transfer like transferring like this into any program. Well, I mean, I'll admit that I don't follow all programs as closely as I follow this one, but I mean, we've been in the mix for, I feel like, all of these guys.
Well, there's a perfect storm, right? You have to have roster availability, right? Some years you're in a roster crunch and finding you may not even really play in the portal. You have to, in the case of BYU, be willing to maybe take a risk on somebody that doesn't fully understand BYU's culture.
Yep.
Right. Though with Averett, I know he wasn't at a church school. He's at Utah Valley. I assume he understands what he's getting into. Right. Harms.
He's got a good relationship with the coaches. Well, he's not far away.
He's got a
pretty good idea. I'm sure.
I mean, he's going to have a much better idea than Harms, right? There's a massive cultural difference between West Lafayette, Indiana, and Provo, Utah, right?
Yeah, and I don't know. Has Harms been to campus?
I have no idea.
I think his campus visit was virtual.
Yeah. Campus wasn't open. Even if he came, walking around campus with no students, that's not exactly a real indicator. I'm with Sweeney. This is somewhat unprecedented. Now, in football, there have been years where there have been several difference-making JUCO transfers, especially in the 80s and 90s when Ricks was still a thing.
Yep.
And there was, a couple years. I don't know if it's like this, though. It's so different and it's little apples and oranges, but anyway, it's fascinating. Randy Whittle.
Yeah, I mean, Ricks was winning like junior college national champions and sending players down to Provo pretty frequently.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pipeline, and especially it really helped with development on the defense and offensive line. It wasn't just those positions, but that was often, groups that came through. But again, this is very different. It's not a feeder school, if you will, like Ricks was. I mean,
right.
One came from Utah Valley, which maybe is kind of not a feeder school. I mean, no disrespect to him. I just mean, Pope just coached there, right?
Well, yeah, but it's different than coming out of junior college ball, right? Because junior college ball, those guys are all going somewhere after a couple of years.
Right.
You go to Utah Valley, you can play your entire career there. Yep. Right? Like, but you're playing JUCO ball, you're going somewhere at some point, right? So it's not really a good it's not the same, right?
Yeah,
so
it's very different. And this whole like graduate transfer thing is a fascinating twist. So Randy Whittle on Facebook had this question. I've been impressed with how the basketball team has made moves to rebuild quickly this offseason. And just with Mark Pope as the new coach in general. This also has me worried that he may not last long at BYU before bigger programs come calling. What's your over-under for Pope lasting at least 5 years with the Cougars? Let's do 4.5 total, because I like halves. That way there's no pushing, right? 4.5 years, are you taking the over meaning more or the under meaning less?
That's total. That's including the season we just had?
Correct.
Taking the under.
I'm going to take the over.
I think we get 3 more seasons. But if they don't play this year, I take the over. Right? Like if something happens and there's no college basketball, then I take the over.
Yeah, I'm going to take the over, and I'll tell you why. I think think Pope, obviously he's already made one jump, right? And he went from one D1 school to another D1 school. Definitely a jump up in prestige, and the WAC and the WCC. I mean, it's a move up, right, conference-wise. But even take out the conferences, just the histories of the programs, the resources of the program, all those things. So I think I've read this in interviews, not with Pope necessarily, but it seems like this younger generation of coaches is looking to not jump as frequently because they don't want to be the next Bruce Pearl, right? Like they don't want to have that reputation as they recruit that I'm just going to go to the next person that offers me a little bit more money. And, you know, for Pope, this was, I think for him to leave, it's going to have to be something substantial. And by this, I mean, I think if a mediocre Big 12 program comes, the answer is no, right? I think if a mediocre SEC program comes, the answer is no. I think it's going to have to be not necessarily like one of the storied programs. Obviously, if it's Kentucky, I think he's gone, right? He played there.
Yeah, that one's easy, right?
But I don't think it has to be like one of those like eight programs, right? I'm just saying I don't think he's going to jump because of, you know, a slight improvement. I think his next jump is going to be, and again, I don't know anything about his frame of reference, right? And he may jump because somebody's going to offer him a couple hundred thousand dollars more, and that's his prerogative. But I'm guessing for him, I mean, there's some cool things about if he becomes a legend at BYU that is hard to replicate any place else besides the storied programs. Not impossible. But at BYU, if he had some deep tournament runs, he's a legend forever, right? And that's not exactly the same, depending on where you went, in other places and the expectations. The other thing is, you know, his style has worked with UVU and BYU, and I, you know, he may want to prove, this is a counterpoint, he may want to prove that he can do it outside of Utah and without a roster that's, you know, a third to two-thirds missionaries, right? He may want to prove something and may decide after 2 years to go. I have no idea. But I hope he stays.
I hope he stays too. You know who I think is a higher flight risk is Burgess.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's because it's a little bit different, right? If a mediocre SEC or Big 12 team comes and is knocking on Pope's door, I think you're right. I don't think he leaves for that. Kentucky's not going to come calling for a long time. I mean, Calipari is what, 50, mid 50s? So I think he's got a lot of coaching left in him. And so, but it's going to take that type of thing to pull Pope away. So the timing of that, you never really know what that is. But Burgess, who I think is an important piece of this, if a middle of the road Big 12 team came and offered him a head coaching job, I think you have to take it if you're him.
Well,
does he get that offer, or does he get an offer from like a WAC school or somebody? I don't know, but to go somewhere and be a head coach, kind of like when Pope left to go coach at Utah Valley, right? I think you have to take that if you're Burgess, and if we keep having success, it's the assistant coaches that really get picked off.
So say Madsen has two really good years at UVU, and he leaves for someplace else, and UVU comes and wants Burgess to be their coach.
Right.
If you're Burgess and your dream is to become head coach, you likely just take that job.
That's right.
And if you're UVU, you take him just like you did with Madsen and just like you did with Pope, knowing that they might jump. But the key is, if you're UVU, get the best coaches you can get. And if they last for two or three seasons, fine. Because you're probably not going to find a great coach that's going to stay at Utah Valley for 20 years anymore. I mean.
No, yeah, your bread and butter is to find the next big guy and let him make his splash. in Orem.
Now, the problem is, usually that is not sustainable. Programs have not been able to sustain that strategy over time, right? Because picking who the next really good coach is, really hard to do, right? Just because Burgess is a great assistant coach does not mean he'll be a great head coach. You know what I mean? You just don't know.
Right.
And I'm not throwing any shade on Burgess at all. The other point is, if Pope leaves quickly, you may have your next head coach sitting next to him, right? And if everything's clicking well and the program's running well and you think you have an heir apparent, Burgess could just sit and wait and not take some lower-level jobs because he'll know Pope's intentions way better than us, most likely, assuming
That's
they're
right.
close and
That's right.
communicate. So last question on this was from Gary Payne. He says, B-ball continues to gather talent. Brandon, is it Averett? Averett? I don't know. I don't listen to enough radio, so I don't know.
I didn't listen to BYU Sports Nation when they were talking about this, so I don't. I actually don't know.
Does this increase your optimism about the season? Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag pingbag. The transfer of Averett, what, you know, big deal, little deal, no deal?
Toulson says he was the best player on the court in practice when they were at UVU.
Yep.
And you look at his, you look at the film, you know, this is a guy, he's all out all the time. You know, he has great vision on the floor. I mean, just kind of sees, you know, kind of can, looks like it appears to me like he can see plays evolving. Right. So, yeah, I think this is a big deal. I think it definitely increased my optimism about the season. I'm already pretty optimistic, but I feel like this is a good get. I mean, he knows the system. He knows the coaches. The coaches know exactly what they're getting with him. I think you can only be more excited about this team with signing this guy.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he's likely to be one of the best four players on the team this year, right? But I agree with you. I think it's a big deal because I think that the depth that we used to the last couple of years of Dave Rose, not the whole time, because Dave Rose, most of his tenure, had some terrific depth, right? I mean, you had Kyle Collinsworth, you know, playing early on in his career, and Jimmer Fredette, you know, were role players, right? I think Averett gives them much needed depth, potential playmaking ability, perimeter defense, and I think, you know, I think he's a great get. I'm right there with you. I don't think, you know, I don't think he leads the team probably in any category this year. And I'm not discounting Toulson's opinion. I don't think he ends up being one of the three or four best players on the team. I could be totally wrong. This is the same guy that said Tyson Williams would be the backup running back, right? So what do I know?
Yeah, you were wrong on that.
I was wrong on that. But I really like him. The film on him is great, and I think he'll bring tons of energy, if nothing else. Like you said, this guy never stops moving. All right, so football, and we're going to do one question and then jump into our big why and play a game at the same time. What? Luke Crockett on Facebook says, if you could change the outcome of just one BYU football game, which one would it be? And I'm assuming that Luke means all time.
I also made that assumption.
Okay. So if you could change the outcome of one BYU football game in all of history, what would it be?
Well, so we have answered this question before. And I'm going to give you the same answer I gave when we talked about this. I don't know when we talked about this. It might have been 8 years ago. I have no idea. But the game I would pick is a game that took place in, you guessed it, 1996.
It's 1996 or Jason Bourne. Those are the only two answers you ever get.
This is the loss to Washington. You know, you win that game, you're undefeated. You know, with that loss, you ended up ranked fifth in the country and went and played in the Cotton Bowl against a good Kansas State team. You run the table that year. I mean, I don't know what happens.
Yeah, I think that's a great one. I think the other great what if one is, I believe, the one I chose when we did this last, which was a long time ago, which is the Baylor loss at the beginning of the 1983 season.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, again, would have been undefeated. They had had a great year the year before not a great year the year before in 82, so they didn't start as highly ranked as they would other years. And then, of course, you have a couple other one-loss teams in that early 80s time period, 79 and 80, that both would have been interesting. But that 83 team finished ranked 7th. Imagine if you had back-to-back undefeated seasons.
Mm.
They, you know, that run for BYU, quite frankly, between 79 and call it 85, is the best run in school history, without a doubt, and is an underrated one in college football history. I mean, it's not like one of the best. Like, I'm not saying it's top five, but it was a very, very good run for BYU football. But I'm with you on the 96. That would be fascinating. The other one to me would be, and I guess you can only change one, but in 2001, that season, and I think we talked about this last time, if you beat Hawaii in that game, last game of the season, I think you end up beating Louisville in the bowl game, and you end up undefeated that year too. Because I think between the injuries and just the humiliation of that loss to Hawaii, now the difference is, the 96 team and the 1983 team were amazing teams. The 2001 team is potentially the most overrated team BYU's ever had. Right?
They didn't. They gave up 72 points in the loss you mentioned.
Yeah. You know, they really played one of the weaker schedules, which is ironic because Croton would end up getting fired, not because of this, as we've talked about many times, but he would play some of the hardest schedules his last couple of seasons at BYU. Very difficult schedules because the conference was quite good and they had a good out-of-conference schedule.
Yep.
So, anyway. All right, so we got a question from Taylor Millett on Twitter. That's at Woody Mullet. And have you already reacted to the content in this tweet? The answer is no. And this content he's referencing, BYU Sports Nation tweeted this out. And where is it from again? Athlon's College Football Preview. It opposing coach sizes up BYU, which, by the way, I've seen some dumb takes on this on Twitter that this is Whittingham. There's no way Whittingham goes on even as an anonymous on BYU. There's no way he does that to Satake. Right? He doesn't go on and make these comments. It's somebody else.
Could be somebody on Whittingham's staff.
Could be someone on Whittingham's staff. But I don't think it's
the head coach.
I mean, they're like best buddies, right? I don't think you talk about...
Well, anyway. And if you read it, it doesn't sound like Whittingham.
No, probably not. But anyway, all right. We're going to do buy or sell for each of the comments that this guy makes, this opposing coach makes. Buy or sell, Matt. Okay? You ready?
Yeah, I got you. Let's go. You're going to hate all of my answers.
Yeah, I already do. Their returning starting quarterback, Zach Wilson, might not be their best option. So let's start with just that part of the statement. Buy or sell, he might not be their best option.
I'm buying it.
I would buy that. I think there's going to be a full-on race through camp, and they might make a change this season. Buy or sell that portion of the statement about Wilson.
Buy it.
We kind of have to buy that one if you bought the first one, right?
Right.
And then with his injuries, he has kind of plateaued. Okay, those are three separate statements about Wilson. What about the last one? Buy or sell that?
Well, it depends what he means here, right? So with his injuries, he kind of plateaued is what it says. Now, if that means he plateaued and you're just talking past tense, but if you say he has kind of plateaued, you're insinuating like it's not getting any better than this. And I don't believe that's true. I do believe there is room, there is still upside to Zach Wilson. So if that's what he's saying here, that there is no more upside to Zach Wilson, I'm not buying that. I'm selling it.
Yeah, I am selling that as well, and that's how I interpreted it. Okay. His next statement is, they were really banged up in the secondary. There's potential there. It's really all about health on defense. So let's buy or sell that this defense sinks or swims based on the health of the key players in it.
I'm buying that.
I don't think they have the depth. You know, you take out, you know, say the top five defenders. If we lose two or three of those guys for extended periods of time, this defense is going to really struggle. And I think that was part of the problem last year.
Yeah, absolutely was.
I think people hammered Tuiaki, and I think he deserved some of it because I think he did some questionable things. But I think part of the reason he did some of those questionable things was he was trying to compensate for lack of depth and trying to refigure things in the middle of the season when some of his key players either were completely out, right, or were reduced in their effectiveness because of ongoing injuries, right? And we've talked about that with Tonga, how it seemed like Tonga was two different guys depending on which half of the season you're referencing, right?
Yep.
Let's see. You think maybe they've got issues with conditioning only because you see a lot of their guys go down. They've definitely been bit hard by the injury bug while Kalani Sitake has been there. And after a while, you take a look and see if you're causing any of that. All right, I'm just going to boil it down to this. Do you believe, buy or sell this insinuation that conditioning may be a problem for the BYU football team?
I'm going to buy it. It could be a problem.
I am going to buy it, but I just, a rash of injuries, even multiple years, may seem
could
like
have
a pattern of something, and it may be just random.
That's right.
But it could be a pattern, right?
It could be. And that could be the problem. I don't know that it is, but I don't know what the problem is. But there's definitely, there's a phenomenon that we have all observed. But I don't know what the cause is.
Well, and we talked about this maybe two seasons ago. Everybody thinks their team, except for like the top 10 teams in the country, has been hit disproportionately by the injury bug. Fans, right? All think their team was like hammered by injuries. And the answer is it's football.
Well, and the teams that don't feel that way are just teams that are extremely deep. And so when a guy or when people go down, they have somebody come in and the gap between the one and the two or the one and the three is not as wide as it is at most programs.
Well,
right?
Deep,
so
deep
at elite programs, the gap just isn't as wide.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
We've got
for
a better gap here. This is just who we are. And that's okay. That's just where we're at.
But it's also lucky, right? Like if you look at, and Bill Connolly's, I believe it was Bill Connolly. So if I'm attributing it to Bill and it was actually somebody else, but Bill, I believe, has done some work on, you know, a lot of times winning a national championship is your key players not getting hurt, right? Even for the top programs. You know, it's not always the case, but sometimes you just need some luck to have a good season. And
well,
luck,
if somebody takes a weird hit, like, right. I don't know if conditioning can help you there.
Well, I mean, conditioning doesn't help with concussions.
But they get hit, yeah, like that doesn't. Yeah, you look at like what happened with Jaren Hall, right? That's not a conditioning problem.
No, that's not a conditioning problem. And do you think any of Taysom Hill's injuries were conditioning problems? No,
they were all freak things. And so, yeah, I don't know.
That guy does burpees in his sleep.
Yeah, so if you look at some of the injuries there, like you think Tyson Williams was in poor condition?
Yeah,
and that's
what
happened.
Or the training staff didn't address the injury well enough. I mean, just sometimes football is a dangerous, violent sport, and people get hurt. I mean, that is just
a fact.
That's just a fact. Okay, they're never going to surprise you, but they're going to play you really mean, really hard, and they have a tremendous home field advantage in Provo. They can level out some of the middle of the road P5s when they catch them at home. So I'm going to break this one down. Do you buy or sell that they play really mean and really hard? Because I think some fans would definitely sell that statement, but it's coming from an opposing coach who, assuming, has played them a time or two recently.
I think by and large, I buy that.
I would buy it as well. And I think it, the narrative a lot of times when you lose is you're not playing hard enough. And you and I have both played sports, not at the college level, I get it. But did you ever have a game you lost where the team you were on played super hard and gave everything they got?
No, you usually lose because you got beat.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes you might make some mistakes. Sometimes you might make a mistake that costs you a game. But if you make a mistake or two that costs you a game, then it was probably like it's a pretty close matchup anyway,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So and that's not because you weren't playing hard.
Okay, buy or sell the home field advantage in Provo?
Oh, absolutely buy. We have a home field advantage in Provo.
And buy or sell basically kind of the insinuation that they can only beat middle-of-the-road P5 teams.
I'm selling that.
I'm selling that one. That doesn't even make any sense with recent history.
And that we can only beat middle-of-the-road P5 teams at home. That doesn't match up with history, which is what you just said, right? Yeah. That's not a factual statement.
Yeah, it's not a factual statement. All right.
We can level out. Well, level out maybe not, isn't the right term, but we can beat a P5 team with the right preparation and execution.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
We
beat a good Wisconsin team on the freaking road, right?
Season and that's and a tough environment.
Tough environment.
I would say that environment's tougher to go into than Provo is.
They're
right?
not a middle of the road. Oh yeah, it's tougher. And they're not a middle of the road P5 team. Now,
that's right.
They weren't as good as they had been the year before, right? But they were still a good team that year. Anyway, all right, the next one is, the question inside the program is, when are we going to take that next step? But I think the question outside of it is, why do you think they can do the same things the same ways and get different results? Every year, this is a roster that's one of the better-looking G5s on paper, and they can reach up and beat a P5, but they're not athletic or deep enough to look like the P5 they think they can be. They just aren't. So I'm going to break this down into two different statements. Buy or sell that we have one of the better looking G5 rosters in college football.
Gonna buy it.
Definitely you have to buy that, I think.
Right.
Even with recruiting rankings being down, I think what this coach is saying there is absolutely true. The next part is, buy or sell, they're not deep enough or athletic enough to be the P5 look-alike, if you will, that they think they can be. They just aren't. Buy or sell that statement.
When I look at what prevents us or has prevented us from reaching that that level of success against P5 programs that we're all hoping for, depth is a problem there. So there is some truth to that statement. So I guess I have to say buy.
I'm selling it. Here's the thing. We could step into a P5 conference right now. If you take the P5 today, all of the P5, not the top of the P5, the entire spectrum, we're right in the freaking middle.
We would. That's right. I agree with that. We would sit right in the middle of a P5 conference.
That's why I think this statement is... I mean, I get what he's trying to say here. I think I do. But that's why I think the statement is bogus, is because in the end, do we have as much talent on our roster as, you know, pick a Kansas State? Probably yes, right? Kansas, you know, the two.
Well, Kansas, I mean, come on.
You know what I'm saying? So yes, do we have the talent of Oklahoma or Texas? I'm just picking Big 12 teams for no reason, right? But here's a fascinating thing. Okay, I'll get back to that in a second, and we'll finish with that. So I know what the guy's saying, I think, but we already have a roster that could compete in a P5 conference. I just don't think, to your point, it's deep enough. The athletic part about it, I don't know. That's a good question too. But I definitely don't think we're deep enough to compete week in and week out and be in the top third of any of the P5 conferences.
Well, and so I think the buy or sell in this statement really comes down to what you think he means by look like the P5 they think they can be. So is the perception that we think we can be a perennial competitor for a conference championship in a P5, if that's what he believes we think we can be, then yeah, we're not there. But if we believe we could be competitive enough to win enough games to go to bowl games consistently, and every few years, you know, compete for a division or a conference championship in a P5, yeah, I think you could drop us into a P5 right now, and we could do that.
Yeah.
So I guess it kind of depends on what he thinks we think we can be. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tough one. So there's been some talk recently about the fact that the Pac-12 is ripe to be disrupted. Have you been following any of this?
Very, very little.
And basically, they're projecting out in the future at the disparity, the difference that the SEC and Big Ten will have such a massive money difference between their per team takeaway from the TV deals and the conference affiliation stuff. They'll have that such an advantage, and the Big 12 will actually be number 3. And then you have the ACC and the Pac-12 falling behind. So some folks are making the argument that for years we've been saying the Big 12 is the one that's in trouble, right? They're going to get poached and somebody's going to come and try to get Texas and or Oklahoma and pull them out. And some people are saying, well, hold on a second. What if somebody tries to go get USC out of the Pac-12 and says, we can offer you $10 million more a year? Over the next 10 years, you're going to, as a program, going to make that much more money. Right?
Yikes.
So I say all this, I don't know if there's any validity to that, but remember 10 years ago when all of the conference shenanigans happened?
Shenanigans.
And you know, Utah ends up in the Pac-12 and all this. There's going to be another time here in the not-too-distant future when chaos reigns again. And the only prediction I have is it's not going to be as clean and as straightforward as everyone thinks it's going to be, which is basically that somebody's going to come in and wrap dynamite around the Big 12 and blow it up. The reason is they make more money today and are projected to in the future than two of the other P5s. So why is Texas or Oklahoma going to leave to potentially make less money per year? Because you got to follow the money. It was an easy call.
Does Oklahoma think that the way they've been treated and or placed in the conference football playoff? The college football playoff. Do they think that's due to their conference affiliation? Negative. And do you think that Oklahoma believes that if they were to move to the SEC, that it would increase their chances of getting a better seed?
I'm not talking about the SEC.
Or chance of winning.
If the SEC comes and offers Texas and Oklahoma a spot, don't you think they both take it?
I think it depends on the money.
Well, the money
is going to depend on how much bigger the money is. How much bigger the money is.
It's the SEC. The SEC and Big Ten are going to make in the future and already do way more money than everybody else. I mean, it's almost hilarious that when you look at these charts, what the differences are and will be. The Big Ten and SEC, their leadership has played all of this stuff masterfully. And I've got to give Bowlesby credit. The Big 12 has done okay, despite some of their weirdness with their, you know, having a conference championship game when you don't need one, right?
Conference of champions.
The Pac-12 has bungled this completely. And it may cost them their seat at the table, because what if USC leaves? Now, I don't know if USC is going to leave. You're going to leave all of your historic rivals behind. Are you really going to put all of your Olympic sports in a league with, in a league in the Big 12? Or are you going to join the West Coast Conference? You know what I mean? If it's a football-only kind of deal. Like, you know, I mean, some of these, you start pulling it apart, and maybe it doesn't make a lot of sense. But if you believe the stories, Oklahoma basically didn't go to the Pac-12 because Oklahoma State, they wanted Oklahoma State to come with them, right? And Texas didn't go kind of at the last second, right? So if those stories are true, then I think what it means is there'll be just lots of insanity when this starts happening.
Oh, it's going to be craziness.
And I don't know what that means for BYU, but it'll mean that the landscape is different, and changes markedly. So anyway, all right, well, that's enough. It's enough for today. We've filled up an hour
All right.
of the listeners' lives, so there you go. A little BYU, a
There's an.
little hot dog talk. Jason Bourne beating up Thor. Because Jason Bourne, nobody would have had to tell
We've
him to
really run the gambit.
go for the head. He would have gone for Thanos' head in the first one.
Yeah, come on, guys. Come on,
You
guys.
wouldn't have needed a second movie.
Nope.
He would have killed Thanos. He would have killed Thanos. It wouldn't have been Ethan Hunt, though. He wouldn't have killed Thanos. It would have just been him screaming in the background, "They're dead! They're all dead!"
And there would have been some running.
There would have been lots of running, like high-speed
Something with Tom
running.
Cruise like sprinting across the screen.
Somehow he would have outrun Black Panther and Captain America, and no one would know
He
why.
would have been great for that final scene, where like the two huge groups are running towards each other.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking
Yeah,
about.
it'd been
Like, he would have
perfect.
been right
Ethan
up
Hunt
there
would be
with Captain
perfect
America
there.
and Black Panther in front of the
Perfect.
group.
Perfect.
Do you know that sometimes on those Tom Cruise, they speed up the film to make it look like he's running faster?
Well, yeah, sure they do. It's
They do
movie
that.
magic.
It's movie magic, man. Nobody runs that fast or that frantic. Well, anyway, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. You can support this podcast at patreon.com/riseandshout. And we will be back next week. Actually, not next week. I'm going to take a week off. So scratch that. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!